Ding dong, the Oilers are dead. Good run. Classic. Just the old classic. Canadian team makes the finals. The world. The country talks about who to root for. Yeah. Rabble.
Yeah.
I think you got to be, by the way, some of the dumbest human beings alive if you like get like truly, genuinely, deeply upset that a Canadian cheers for the Canadian franchise. Like,
oh yeah.
I personally was rooting for just a good series, but ultimately the Panthers to win. If you're sitting there going like, yes.
Oh yeah, cheering for the, yeah.
I'm so mad about the people that cheered for the, like, okay. Probably got to do a little bit of in through the nose, out through the mouth. Either way, your fears are, your worst case scenario is gone. The fears can be subsided. The Oilers are dead. There ain't no way they're coming back from down 3-0. There's a 0.00000% chance. Here's the other thing, too. They got their coach talking about how they're not getting really outplayed. Yeah, you are. You are. Game one was different than that game. I don't care what the shots say. That was a clinic. That was a real win by the Florida Panthers. Yes, Edmonton pressed later, but that is why we have score effects. That is what we should all understand about where a game is at and what ends up happening with it. One team trying to protect a lead goes a little bit more conservative and the other team gets more aggressive. Like, that's the way she goes. So no, I think that these things, I really do believe the Panthers are deeper. The Panthers are tougher. The Panthers are getting more from their top end players. They have a clearly better goaltender. They've clearly got the better coach. And Edmonton doesn't have its one thing that was a clear advantage in the series, which is their vaunted power play. And so last night was another night where if you're an Oilers fan, you can say we got more shots, but Darnell Nurse turned a puck over and it was in the back of our net. Now, what is he, minus 16? Skinner bobbles a play and then it's in the front of our net and boom, it's in the back of our net. Skinner, it's your fault. This is why we're losing. It's the goalie we like to blame. It's the defenseman we like to blame. Yeah, okay, the whipping boys hurt you last night. They certainly did. But here's the real reason why the Edmonton Oilers are losing this series. The guys they're built on aren't doing the thing. The idea of the Edmonton Oilers was that it was predicated on Draisaitl and McDavid going into the series and being the two best players on planet Earth. You know, I got John Wiener, a.k.a. Stu Gotz, from the Dan Le Batard show coming up here. The whole world went crazy when a guy from their show, Greg Cote, wrote an article about how Connor McDavid's overrated. And I do think it was a clickbaity article. I know what this guy was doing. He was having fun. And he was going after a fan base that can get way too protective about a player that they get way too protective of. Fine. All in good fun. All good in sports. But yeah, ultimately this series is, in my opinion, being very much decided by Alex Barkov outplaying Connor McDavid. He is obliterating him. This is as good of a run from a defensive center as we've seen in a while. This goes on to my most recent pantheon, which I want to talk about with some of the better defensive forwards in the game. This goes with Bergeron, Kopitar, and Ryan O'Reilly. In terms of not the superstar in the league, not the face of hockey, not the Sidney Crosby Stanley Cups, not the Patrick Kane Stanley Cups. This is the, I play 200 feet, I kill penalties, I play the other team's top line, and I produce points. And I feel like a net positive. And last night, again, Barkov was the best player. And you look at even the end of it. You look at the end of that game. Who's on the ice? Obviously Barkov. Who's winning draws? Obviously Barkov. Who's winning board battles to get the puck out? Obviously Barkov. He has eaten the Oilers' lunch. Here's the facts. Ultimately, Connor McDavid has 3 points in this series, all assists, two of which were massive fluke goals, right? The first one, Ekholm, I don't even know if Connor McDavid had the primary or the secondary assist. Ekholm rips one by Bobrovsky off the rush. One last night, Brobov, he throws one at the net and it bounces off a body and it ends up in the back of the net. Okay, that's two of McDavid's assists. Draisaitl is pointless. He has 0 points in this entire series. And he's been a minus. Last night, there was a point in the game where he was a minus three. Alex Barkov is outplaying both of these guys. What did he do last night? He broke up the play at the point and then breaks the puck out for the first goal. Gets it down the boards, finds the trailer, and then Forsling ends up making a beautiful pass. Boom, the Panthers are up 1-0. He rips a goal off the rush, a beautiful goal. Buries one. Out there just shutting down two of the world's best players who are now playing on the same line, you know, for the vast majority of this game, and he's still holding Draisaitl to a minus. He's still holding Connor McDavid to 3 points over three games. So yes, the goaltender has been terrific, but Bobrovsky has been unbelievable. But for me, for my money, right now, the guy that is driving the bus for the Florida Panthers is Alex Barkov. And he is really putting down a stamp as basically modern-day Kopitar. He is a mix of those kind of guys. Kopitar, Bergeron, Ryan O'Reilly, Barkov. He is the next in line for being that Selke-caliber player who also provides offense. The guy who you feel like when he's on the ice, everything is safe. Nothing is going to go against you. Barkov is a five-star stud. And we've all kind of known it. Because we all pay attention to the Panthers, to some, like, they're so good these last couple of years that they're in our orbit, that we were aware of what the Panthers are doing. They beat up on the Leafs last year, so we're especially aware of that, how good they are as a team. And yeah, again, Bobrovsky has stood on his head. Game one was brilliant. That's about as good as I've ever seen a hockey player play in a game. Any position. He was outrageous. Some of the saves he made. The save he made last night when they were up 4-3, and McDavid makes a beautiful pass. I think it was back to McLeod again, because McLeod had one and he just stones him. But Barkov, man, Barkov is the kind of player where, oh, you'd kill. This is a guy who's going to have, you know, 17 years, 15 years in the NHL and dominate the entire way through. He is, to me, should be the Conn Smythe winner. He is, to me, the face of the Florida Panthers, even though, you know, Tkachuk is going to get all the press clippings and Bennett's going to drive everybody mad and Bobrovsky is going to get talked about. But no, this guy's the stud. I don't know how our boy Jason Bukala isn't a general manager somewhere grabbing Barkov. Like, it's just, he should be the team president for identifying Barkov. He's dominating. So yes, you can compare it to these other runs, which I want to hear in a sec before we get to Stu Goss, before we get to John Wiener. He's putting together almost the blueprint of the top end defensive centers who can play it two ways. Ryan O'Reilly, when he won his Stanley Cup, 23 points in 26 games, 8 goals, +2. Barkov, 21 points in 20 games, 7 goals, by the way, +4. It's very, very close. I did look back at this and go, man, Bergeron, his run, he had 14 assists in 23 games, 23 during his Stanley Cup run. He finished with a +15. Unreal. The crazy one is Kopitar, who I think is the closest comparison to Barkov in terms of how they play. He got 2 cups. He was a point-per-game player in both of those cups, 20 and 20, and then 26 and 26. Those two combined cup runs, he was a +25. Oh, that is outrageous. I think he should have gotten one of those Conn Smythes. And he absolutely, those runs, I think, are about as underrated as they get. But I think that's what we're seeing right now, is a reminder of how great Kopitar was, because we're seeing basically the exact same guy in Sasha Barkov. Anyways, a guy who I, you know, really hope is watching these games, John Wiener, co-host of Dan Levitard Show with Stu Gotz. How much of these games are you watching? Like, if the Marlins come on, like, are you like, oh, you know, you got runners on the corners. Like, what is the attention to detail here, my friend?
Listen, we're arriving at the point of the sports calendar where we're running out of options. So, and this is one of the few that we have. Yeah. It's one of the few that we have. It's a local story. Panthers have never won the cup, been there twice. So I'm paying attention to these games. Like, it's fun. You know, the guys on our staff, Roy in particular, who is headed to Edmonton right now, actually, as we speak. Good luck with that trip. But Roy is, you know, he's a lifelong Panther fan. He covers them, but he's a lifelong fan. And so I'm paying attention because it means a lot to guys like Roy. It means a lot to people on our staff. I'm from New York. I mean, I grew up on Long Island. I was, you know, like my wheelhouse is the Islanders. Four straight cups, drive for five. They lose to Edmonton. Gretzky and Messier take over the sport. And so I'm into this. This has been fun. It's been cool to see South Florida turn into a little hockey town here, you know? So it's nice. It's been fun.
Yeah, I would tell Roy, you know, if they win, wait with security as long as you can. That's why it would be hang out in the building, enjoy your time, but then don't go out on the street like half cock on. Does anybody have a light? Can I bum a cigarette in his Panthers jersey? That's going to be a bad formula.
So you're telling Roy to lay low is what you're saying.
Lay low, Roy. Lay low.
Enjoy your cup. Stay close to the Florida Panthers.
Man, there is nothing like a sour hockey fan base after a big-time loss. That is fight central. That is somebody's going to say, what did you say? You're like, nothing. You guys had a good team this year. No, there's nothing will save you. There's nothing.
So I want to ask you this, because Dan and I have been saying for a couple of weeks now, we maintain that Canada as a whole is really upset about this. In fact, we have a guy somewhere in the middle of nowhere in one of those little sheds, and he's got a little hole, and he's fishing, and his television. Yeah. When he turns the TV on, it only has hockey on it. Okay, doesn't matter what channel he turns to, it just has hockey.
Just that,
right?
Yeah.
Like Canada has to be mad that South Florida, West Coast, East Coast, the Tampa Bay Lightning, and the Florida Panthers, they own hockey. Like that has to piss off Canada, does it not?
It doesn't. It's a weird phenomenon. Wow. I do think that there's an element of it that we haven't won since 93. Like a team up here hasn't won. So there is this incredibly large stake of whichever team gets the next Stanley Cup, it is just like an oversized win. So no fan base is really deeply, truly rooting for the other to get that prize because the bragging rights are going to be monumental here. And so it's like, you know, it's you know, you go to a town.
Oh, I see. So meaning the other cities, they want the cup before.
Right. You go to a small town. Who's the rival? It's not someone that's in a different state. It's your hometown, you know, the school that's across the street from you. That's who you hate the most. And that's Canadian hockey teams is everybody hates everybody up here. There's basically just degrees of who you hate a little bit less. Like, I'm not rooting for the Oilers. I think most Canadians, if there's one thing that bonds us, is that we really recognize the greatness of Connor McDavid. And this is a sport where the greatest ones have won. But he's playing in an era where the league has basically designed it where it's impossible to win consistently. And that's what's, I think, the most outrageous part about the Florida thing is that you guys don't pay taxes. Like, that's our understanding. You don't pay any taxes. All you guys are living completely free. No state tax.
We have no state
yeah,
tax.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just kidding. I'm joking.
It's why Kentucky, you know, I know, yeah. I know, but it's why Kentucky singing the praises of playing down here. No state taxes.
Right. That's it. Yeah. It's a paradise for hockey players. No one's going to recognize you and screw with your life. You're going to have millions of dollars that go further than they would up in Canada where you get taxed to death. And you get to play golf all the time whenever you want or hit the beach. Who wouldn't want to play in South Florida over Winnipeg, you know, or Toronto now here? We try to put ourselves out of the mix like, no, man, it's kind of the same thing. So I think the thing that drives Canadian hockey fans nuts is not the geographical location or the fact that people in Florida don't care as much. It's the taxes, Johnny. It's the taxes.
It's the money. It's the golf. It's the life. Yeah. Right. Why am I going to go up there and be cold when I could be warm down
and
here?
And criticized.
Right.
Like,
and criticized.
The Panthers
suck. You treat that the way we treat football.
Exactly.
Right? Exactly right.
Exactly. Yeah. So you come up here and you suck, and everybody's killing you. But Draisaitl was a point a game all the way through the playoffs. He's like a historically great playoff performer. And now he's got no points in the Stanley Cup final. I led my show today like, what a loser. You know, this guy sucks. He can't do anything right. And
I know.
He gets sick of
that. Many opportunities. He had so many opportunities against Bob in that first period, too.
Yeah.
And in fact, throughout the whole game, it's how is Connor McDavid and his performance being received? Because, as you know, Greg Cody, who's on our show every Tuesday, wrote a column about Connor. He called him Mick overrated.
Yeah, I know. It's funny.
And really what Greg was trying to say, and I happen to agree with this, is you know, if you're going to be the chosen one, you're going to be the great one, you're going to be one of those guys, you got to validate all of it with, you know, eventually winning a Stanley Cup.
You
how is he being received, having only two assists through three games here?
So there's two things here. One is, because I am Canadian, every time I read his name, it's Greg Côté. So you can pass that along to him. But in this country, he's Greg Côté. Like, everyone that read that article was like, can you believe this Greg Côté guy? So
that's only going to bring a smile to his face.
Yeah, you should. You should. Like, that's what I'm saying, is that he, up in Canada, you are Greg Côté. But down there, you're Greg Cody. Okay, got it. That's clear for the audience now. Two is, he's going to wear it for sure, but he's sort of one of those bulletproof dudes. Like, this is the best comparison I can make it to just off the top of my head right now, is, you know how Kyrie could have had no good games in the NBA Finals, and the Hoopers, right? Like, the former players that respect his game so much would have never really gone after him, right? The first two games, they would have never crushed him, because the true Hoopers love Kyrie, and they would say, oh, if you're going to criticize Kyrie, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, you have no idea. Oh, you know, you've got guys, like, I saw Evan Turner come to the woodworks defending him from Barstool and Boston fans. Like, Kyrie is a sacred player to basketball players, former NBA players. They are just so reluctant to criticize him. And it's very similar here with McDavid, is he's so great, and anybody that really pays attention to the sport can recognize it and understand it. He's just got this incredible work. Like, he's got so much on his shoulders. This team has mismanaged their salary cap horrifically, and it's kind of mostly about his and Draisaitl's greatness that they're even in this position, right? Like, he carries them. So it's just, it's he deserves some criticism. There's no doubt about it. He's getting outplayed by Barkov. That's how I started the show, is he just is. Barkov has been better than McDavid in this series. Like, there's just no doubt about it. And so that will be a thing, but he's not going to get, like, crushed as a loser, and we're not going to call him, what would he write in the article? McOverrated. You know, we're not.
McOverrated. Yeah. You know, it's interesting, because Barkov probably has better surrounding talent, which by extension,
but he's also been better.
He's been, he's been a lot better. Yes. But it makes the game easier when because the Panthers are deep and they have a lot of talent surrounding Barkov. And so when you have that, and you're saying McDavid probably lacks that a little bit because of the mismanagement of the salaries and all that, right?
They got a goalie.
It just makes the game easier for Barkov. I'm not making excuses for McDavid, but I do happen to agree with Greg. Like, if you're going to treat hockey the way we treat football down here, or the NBA, eventually that guy's going to get slammed over the head because of his inability to win a Stanley Cup. He's got to win a Stanley Cup to validate the career. He has to.
Yeah. Just if you look.
I would say that he's not a top five Oiler of all time. And you're going to say I'm crazy, but.
Yeah, for sure.
I would tell you, going back to those teams that finally got past the Islanders in the 80s, that Gretzky's the obvious number one. But I think after that, it's Curry, it's Messier, it might be Paul Coffey. And I think some people might throw Grant Fuhr in there. I have no idea.
No, these are great players.
Even a top five Oiler?
These are great players. And I just think that we do this a lot in sports, where we go, who's the greatest? And then we use the winning stuff. And then to me, it's like there's differences between accomplished and great, right? So some of those Oilers are far more accomplished than they always will be. But again, this era is a hard cap era. If the Oilers were able to just look at McDavid and spend a ton of money around him and just not have to deal with that, they would be doing it. There's more teams. There's a cap. Bettman is hell-bent on having everybody essentially be the same, where you show up every single night and the teams are, there's as much parity as possible. Even like, you know, I feel bad for those Tampa Bay teams to a certain degree, because they did such an incredible job of drafting and developing and figuring out their players and getting this incredible culture and buy-in. And even them, where they're getting dudes on sweetheart deals and taking massive haircuts to stay, like Braden Point, a guy down there, should be making, if he plays in Canada, you know, he's a $11+ million player down there. It's like 9.5. They still have to break up. Yeah, that's it. Exactly. They cost of living too, but it's just, you have a different time, and people understand it, where it's like, it's really way harder to win now than it was in those eras. And if you, like, I don't like the whole you drop a player in a different era thing, because there's so many different advantages modern day players have, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But if you would have dropped Connor McDavid back then, like, we would, on that team, people would have lost their minds. Like, they would have thought it was magic that was happening in front of them. He's so talented, great. His skating, his vision, everything about him is, yeah, it's as good as it gets. Like, yeah, he's the greatest right now to have never won, in my opinion, in the sport. Like, which, yeah, it's not even close. I do want to ask you one thing before, you know, we go here that's not hockey. I want to pivot to this thing. This is just another big South Florida topic. Okay. I'm curious what you guys are such a weird sports market to me where you have good teams, great teams, and then I don't know how into it a lot of people are all the time, how much like sports is like really driving the pulse. But what is the Jimmy Butler discourse like right now? Like, either you got this guy wearing Sparks stuff and he's flirting with the Lakers and he so clearly wants out, and Pat Riley has gone at him, but I would think that there's got to be a little bit of, hey, is Pat Riley too old to be on the job here? Is this a pending Belichick situation where they kind of almost are looking towards a breakup? Are people sympathetic to Butler, hate Jimmy Butler, indifferent about Jimmy Butler? Like, what does this offseason look like for that Heat team?
So it's interesting. It's with Jimmy, when Jimmy first came down here, and Dan and I were two of the people saying this, we agreed with a lot of the people who listened to our show. Like, Jimmy to us was never a guy we viewed as a guy who, if he's your best player, can take you to the NBA Finals. And Jimmy's done it twice. Like, yeah, we did not expect that. Now, if you want to say that's all Jimmy, you want to say that's partly Riley, Spo, Heat culture, all that stuff, whatever it is, the fact of the matter is they've been to the NBA Finals twice with Jimmy as their best player, and they've been to the Eastern Conference Finals three times. And so, you know, and I don't think people were expecting that. They weren't because Jimmy has never shown proof he could do that throughout his entire career. In fact, Stan Van Gundy was on with us right before they signed Jimmy and said, if Jimmy's your number one, you're not going to go very far. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the line down here, that changed, where Jimmy became a clear number one option that could take a team to an NBA final. He didn't win any, but he's taken them there. And I don't think Heat fans were expecting that, especially after the run we had with LeBron, Wade, and Bosch. And so there's some fans kind of on both sides. They love Jimmy. They love what he's done. They love what he's done for the city, the organization, the winning that he's done. And some people are starting to criticize Riley because they think he has lost his ability to land a big free agent, or he's lost his ability to surround Jimmy with the right talent. And listen, for me, that sounds kind of ludicrous. I mean, he did get Jimmy Butler. He got him away from the Philadelphia 76ers. What a mistake they made, go with Tobias Harris instead of Jimmy Butler. But he did land Jimmy. Bam has been great. Like, I think Riley still has it. I don't know, and I think they're growing tired of Jimmy. And so if you're asking me, fan base, are they going to side with Riley here? Are they going to side with Jimmy? This fan base down here, and they do care about this thing, about this team, this product, they're going to side with Riley every time. I mean, this is the guy that made basketball relevant in South Florida and brought him LeBron and brought him Wade and brought him Shaq. But Riley is kind of on the clock here, where he's got to show the fan base, hey, if we lose Jimmy, I'm able to pivot and we'll do this. Or, you know, perhaps I'll add this. We'll keep Jimmy and I'll add a big name to help Jimmy, Bam, Tyler Herro, and those guys. So I think Riley's starting to feel a little pressure, which is something I never thought I'd say down here because Riley's done so much. And I think the fan base is just, it's not that Jimmy, they all know that Jimmy deserves to get paid. It's just the way he's going about it. And, you know, Riley doesn't like it. And if Riley doesn't like it, you know, a large portion of the fan base is going to side with him all the time.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting because, of course, Pat Riley, you know, legend there and obviously massive, massive basketball legend in general. But he is 80 years old now, right? Like, what is it? He's got to be 80, 70, late 70s, early 80s.
I think he's maybe 78, 79.
Yeah,
somewhere
okay,
in that range.
Sorry.
No.
It's like he's right there. And I just, having just watched this with the Patriots, where you go, hey, you were Bill Belichick, and now there's that awkward moving on phase of what is it going to look like, and what is Heat culture without Pat Riley? And what is Heat culture if I guess Jimmy Butler is a bit of a malcontent, but what is it if you can't get him to buy in? The free agent thing that you even mentioned, that drives me insane. Like, the fact, like, he did just get Jimmy Butler. You know who Toronto's best free agent signing is? Like, I'm not even joking here. So we've had, our biggest one was Heydou Turkoglu. That's our biggest one.
Congratulations.
Second biggest one is probably Damari Carroll. So just for some perspective for you.
How'd you land Kawhi? How'd Toronto land
trade.
Kawhi?
Forget
how
that, trade, yeah. Oh, it was
right.
a trade.
Trade, yes. Right.
And our most successful free agent, I would argue, was a one-year contract for Bismack Biyombo, where he came here and helped us go to an Eastern Conference final. So to hear the idea of a Miami fan going like, we didn't get washed up Damian Lillard and overpay for him in a trade, even though he wanted to go there, like he was actually bought in for you, but you didn't land it as some mark against the against Pat Riley, isn't, you don't deserve anything there. You don't deserve.
But that's my point. He has spoiled us, and he has spoiled his fan base.
Unreal.
He almost set the bar. Listen, when you land LeBron,
that's what I mean.
When you land, I know, because people are saying Brad Stevens should win the Finals MVP, and he has really put together an unbelievable roster. And they're saying the week where he signed, I think it was Drew Holiday, or he made whatever deal they got.
He traded for Drew Holiday for peanuts. But like, he traded two injured guys for Drew Holiday, and you're looking at it, it's like, what? How the hell did this happen?
Right, because the boss thought that Damian Lillard was a better option. I mean,
yeah,
Drew
good job.
Is the guy who wins championships every place he goes. But it's funny because they were saying that Brad Stevens had the great, you know, it was the greatest week a GM has ever had when he made those three particular signings.
Yeah.
To which I argued, hey, Riley had a better week.
Yeah.
He signed Wade, LeBron, and Chris Bosh, who were all free agents, and he did so in the span of 48 hours. So when you set the bar that high, and Riley has, the expectations are enormous. And when you don't meet those expectations, some of the fans are going to come down on you. But it's not like they completely dropped off. Yeah. Again, NBA Finals, two of the last 3 or 4 years. And we'll see what happens moving forward here. I think the problem in the Eastern Conference is the Celtics look. This doesn't seem like, at least for me, I know they've been there. They've been close. They've been flirting with this. This isn't the end of this Celtics run. We're just seeing the beginning of this Celtics run. And Tatum and Brown are amazing. Drew Holiday, incredible.
Yeah.
To me, the Porzingis piece is kind of interchangeable. They could fill that role with a lot of guys. And so I'm not that concerned about it. But, that's the difficult thing is, will anyone get their roster to be as good as the Boston Celtics? I'm not certain that's possible.
Yeah, I think Denver is probably the only hope, and that's why I could never get fully behind the Anthony Edwards thing just because I knew this was looming,
crazy.
You know? It was like, I loved Edwards and I was enjoying it just like anybody else, but to have them knock off Denver was it was like the instant gratification thing for people where they're like, nice, a new face of the NBA, let's have this conversation. But in reality, it spelled doom for a great NBA Finals because, I didn't think that either Minnesota or the Mavs were really, really going to push Boston. But it's a little unfortunate. But after, we started this conversation with me going, no, Canada doesn't care, and South Florida, you can have the thing, and no bother. But after all this talk and, being reminded of the parade, and also you steal Chris Bosh from us, and he told Toronto before the trade deadline, they were like, should we trade him? He was like, nah, I might come back. And that
you're holding some resentment towards South Florida. No now, state tax. I mean, listen, I'm on to you. I mean, you can play it as cool as you want.
I was kind of indifferent.
You hate us.
Yeah, no, like I've had nothing but good times when I've visited Miami, but now I'm like, I hate it. I hate you guys. I hope you lose everything. I hope that you become the first team to blow the 3-0 lead. Hey, John, thanks so much for making time.
Here's what I can tell you. We don't deserve this.
No, of course you don't.
We don't deserve any of this.
No, but that's it. You know it because you're not from there. It's like at least you have the perspective. At least you're someone who's like the city transplant who's looking up and remembering what life was like in the Northeast where people care about sports really deeply and it's an identity of them. And you're down here with these people who are like, oh, we're going to win a Stanley Cup? Cool. That's great. The coolest thing of that is the parade. Like, no, it's the worst.
But here's the best part of South Florida. If they win, we're going to party. And if they lose, we're going to party. You're right. It's not part of an identity.
No.
It's like adding sprinkles or adding a cherry on top.
I was going to say, you normally could go through in different bars, right? When a team wins something, they have like the legendary stories of, and then this team came in here and they spent all this money and our sales spiked throughout the run. It's like, you guys, there's no indicator. It's just a flat line across. Like, nothing has changed. No teams have been here. The team successes have nothing to do with the bar's successes. Hey, buddy, this was great, as always. Thanks so much for making time.
You got it. There's no bars in the Everglades. That's why. That's where they play hockey.
It's true.
We play in a swamp. My pleasure.
Fair enough.
Hang in there, Canada. Okay? Hang in there.
See you, buddy. John Weider, aka Stu Gotts, co-host of the Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gotts. Yeah, that is the one thing. I don't know if the NHL, how they look at it or what they, but that is between Vegas, Tampa, and now Florida, just the consistency in which the no state taxes teams are making the Stanley Cup final and the competitive disadvantage it is putting these other teams. Like I've mentioned this before and I've done shows like this about how we used to believe that there was at least an advantage to being a Canadian market of people here will care. People, it will mean more when you win, right? Because winning in Florida, it's not going to mean a thing. Honestly, part of this is, you think if Anze Kopitar had that plus 26, right? Sorry, plus 25 point a game player and two Stanley Cup runs, think if he did that in Montreal, we would forget.
Yeah.
But like and no one forgot Anze Kopitar is a great player. My point is that when I was looking at this yesterday, I went, how don't we talk about this every week?
Yeah. You're like, what? Really?
Plus 25 point a game, two cup runs, 20 minutes a night, best defensive forward on the team. Footnote. NHL footnote. Sorry, Futes. Sorry, Mike Fute, a friend of the show. But like, it's true. It doesn't matter the same. Guess what? They don't care. Matters the same to them. They still get the ring. They still get to show up at things. They get to go to the alumni events, hold out the rings. They, if they want to move to wherever the hell they want, they arrive there as champions. You can't take that away from them. Ultimately, who cares? So yeah, what? Some idiot fans that you never think about anyways don't think about you enough? Yeah, it's fine. But if Gary really wants it to be fair, which he so seemingly wants it to be, fair with rivalries, maybe at some point there does have to be some discussion about a way to insulate the non, no state tax, no provincial tax provinces and states. Just a thought. Anyways, let's take a quick break and let's talk to Rafi Torres.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I haven't gone on record about this yet, but that new Eminem song sucks. And there's a lot of people my age that were trying to defend it because it sounds kind of Eminem-ish, and it's just, I'm sorry. The time has passed.
Yeah, it's bad, bad.
Yeah, it's just time to move on and get a new thing, and we don't need this. I feel like this is actually an attack at me because the Gen Zs are coming at the millennials hard with this, being like, this is what you like. Meanwhile, ignoring their entire musical history, which
catalog.
Is horrific. Yeah, at least we had this guy in his prime. You guys have literally Billie Eilish. That's your thing. Sick. Anyways, 12 years in the show, member of the Oilers 2006 Cup finalist team, now coaching junior hockey with the Markham Waxers. It's Rafi Torres. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
I'm doing really well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you, man. You want to weigh in on Gen Z music, like what you hear? Well, actually, what is it that the 13-year-olds play now in the dressing room? Because it's got to be a nightmare. Do you let them decide?
Listen, when it comes down to, like, naming that guy or naming this guy, I've never been a crazy music guy.
Yeah.
I know, listen, Eminem back in the day, Jesus. Like,
slapped.
No one's touching him, right?
100% agree.
Yeah, but you know what? Listen, they're all over the place. They like, but there's so many rappers and stuff like that. I feel like they all sound the same. I mean, I can't even keep up.
That's buddy. Now that's your welcome to old age.
Right. When Eminem comes on, or Jay-Z comes on, Kanye comes on, you know what we're sounding like, right?
No, but so, that's it. That's it for you. That was, honestly, you may as well have just, put a call in for a headstone because you're like, they all sound the same. That's the, once you do that with music, once you do all the new music sounds the same, it's like, you're done. You put one foot in the grave. So,
bring it on.
Yeah.
But either way, like if we got to go back, everybody knows that I love Biggie, right?
Yeah, you're Biggie.
Biggie Smalls, back in the day.
Of course. Well, I'm surprised that maybe you weren't the the DJ in the dressing room, because I always heard that you were like basically the number one glue guy on the 06 team.
You know what? Thanks. Appreciate that. You know what? But different crowd there, right? Like yeah. Older guys, lot older guys. They you know, they're in their the rock. They're into the rock. Was it like Metallica? You know, AC/DC. All those you know locker room staples back in the day. But no, like I think when it comes to glue guy, I'm more of a glue guy off the ice, maybe yeah. in the bar, ordering yeah. a couple, right?
That was my understanding of things as well.
Bringing everybody together. Let's have a couple. Let's enjoy yeah. the road, right?
Yeah.
And then let's go and play some hockey.
Are right? the Oilers at that point now where it's like, hey, it's time to go out?
You know what? I think if they didn't go out last night, you know, and go dancing a little bit and just figure this thing out. No, I shouldn't say that. But you know what? Hey, listen, it is part of the gig, and that's why teams do well. You know, you got to be able to go through everything together. In 06, when we had that team, we had a it was a lunch pail type bucket team. We go on the road. Jason Smith is like, hey, listen, we're meeting in the lobby in 5 minutes. You better be down there. So everybody gets young guys down there in 3 minutes, being ready to go. And you follow the crowd. And that's the type of team we have. We're going for dinner with 15, 16 guys. Some guys are, maybe going out after for, one or two just to have a nightcap. Mm-hmm. And then you show up at the rink in the morning and it's all business. And that's the type of team we had. I loved it. I loved it. It literally burning the candle at both ends, but you show up at the rink and you do your job.
I was going to say, that's got to be tough for these guys right now when you're in Edmonton, right? Because, where could you go where you're not?
Yeah.
Did you see the video of McDavid trying to go get some Coors Lights?
I have not. No.
Yeah, it's like he tried to go pick them up for himself, which, first of all, what are you thinking? Like, who sent McDavid to do that?
100%. 100%. 100%. But you're right there, JD. Yeah,
he goes and he's getting them, and he's just getting swarmed immediately. Like, people are trying to help him load their trunk, and they're taking pictures. One guy asks him for a hug. Like, it's just...
Oh, man. Yeah, just wants to have a couple of cold ones.
That's what I mean. I just would imagine that when you're there and you're Edmonton, like, you live this... You can't stick your head out the door to look to see if you like had a newspaper on your front porch. Like everything is everywhere.
Yeah, you're right. It's not the biggest city, but and they know every player inside out. And that being even the guys that aren't playing are friggin' they treat even those guys like gold. But you know what? That's the for me that was the best part of playing there. I love playing for. Fans that, they knew that, if I didn't score that game or I wasn't feeling that game, I could do other things to get into the game. And, they appreciate that and they know about it, right? Like, yeah, you know what? Didn't have his best game, but he blocked 4 shots and made some strong plays along the wall and a few shots on net. He was part of the game, right? So they respect that out there and they know that. And that's part of the big reason why I love playing there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that. It's just the places that you want to be. And like, listen, you weren't just a... You had 47 goals in 2 seasons to start in Edmonton. Like, you put your career together there. But, yeah, being a more of a role player, there is a better understanding of the fan base that they will actually be able to get you. I don't know, how much thought that would have happened before you played in Edmonton. But, yeah, I'm obviously you've had that perspective afterwards. But, okay, so what clicked for you there? Because, yeah, again, you go to Edmonton, you put together 47 over your first two. You have by far your best statistical seasons there. You go on a Stanley Cup run. What worked for you about playing in Edmonton?
I think it was the fit. And having Mac T as my coach there, who, to me, I looked up to him like a father. It wasn't just at the rink type coaching. He helped me out with things off the ice, kind of guided me and helped me, become, turn into a man, from being a little boy. And what it was? It was, the group, it was the locker room. We had Stevie Stales, Jason Smith, Horkoff, Ethan Morrow, and then the young guys like Jared Stoll, Greeny, like I'm telling you, like Hamshi, like this was one of the funnest teams ever to play on. And even these guys, those older guys are like, wow, this team is really tight. Really close, during that cup run, they brought in Pekka, they brought in Pronger. Mm-hmm. It was a little weird at first having these big names come in. And then, they bought into what type of team we are and how we are and how we do things. And we had a successful run, right? Like, just coming up short by one game. But, like I said, it was everything about Edmonton is great. And especially what helped me, you know, become that player that I was Mackey had a huge part to do with it for sure.
Yeah. You know, since I was looking at, like all time great runs by teams, best players, recently, just kind of comparing it to what I think Barkov is doing right now for the Panthers. And looking back at your guys' group, like Pronger leading the team in points, I think he had 26 during that run. That's off the top of my head. Yeah, it's like unreal how well he played. But he's notoriously like Captain Serious too, you know, and you're a fun guy who's trying to get people to go out, have a good time. This is someone who, like I said, when I interviewed Pronger last, when I had him on, I asked him if he had fun in Toronto during when he was an all-star here. And he said, I went to the all-star game not to make friends and I took it seriously. And I went, okay. And I was like, that seems about right. That checks out. What was your dynamic like as you being the guy who's like, yo, let's burn it at both ends, and him being like, I'm the most serious dude on planet Earth and I actually might hit you if you do something wrong?
Well, let's backtrack a little bit here. Yeah. By all means, I'm not a guy that's going to say, hey, let's go. We have to go. We have to go and have some drinks. I respect everybody's decision.
Sure.
You know, absolutely. And I'll be honest with you, not back in the day, it's not a lot of guys could keep up, you know, going out, going dancing, and then going, you know, going playing, you know, doing your thing, Hockey Night in Canada.
Yeah.
But anyways, so for me, listen, there's respect there, right? Like, you know, you show up at the rink, you know, and you had a late night before, and if you're not the hardest working guy out there, and you're not on the bike after and getting the sweating it out doing something, then there's a problem, right? Like, and then it's like, all right, well, this guy's head's in the wrong place. All he wants to do is have a good time, and he's not really considered, you know, focused on playing hockey, right? So that's what it is. And like I said, there was accountability held in there, right? Like, you know, there was no chance I could go 3 games without, you know, being invisible out there until I was getting called out. Said, hey, listen, hey, Tori, you going to hit someone tonight, or are you going to get involved, or what's going on here? Right? Like, just the type, but out of, you know, out of coming from a place where, you know, the boys want to see you do well, right? And, you know, and knowing the potential that a player could have, right? So, I mean, that's what was good for me in Edmonton, you know?
Yeah. Hey, man, it was great having a chance to chat with you. Wait, by the way, you think Oilers have any shot before you go?
It's over. It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough.
Yes. that's hockey speak for no chance. Hey, Ravi Torres, 12 years in the NHL. Remember that Oilers 06 team. And, now coaching with the Markham Waxers. Thanks for making time, Rafi.
Yeah, anytime for you, Paul.
See you, buddy. Rafi Torres. That team was really fun. You do look at them. They're incredible. But, yeah, that Pronger run, again, you can put it – you can normally go through it, take a peek at who is the most impactful player over the run. That one, and there's like the debate, right? You go like, who is the guy? That one was a no debater. Sani had like a million goals that run. There were a lot of really good contributors. Again, Rolison was unreal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's your classic. Oh, right. This guy was just in his prime. And that's what I'm saying, I guess, to kind of conclude the stuff on the Oilers series right now is that's how I'm feeling about Barkov. It really is. And it's super interesting, too, that they had Wayne Gretzky on the panel to, what was it, after game one? Yeah, I think it was after game one.
Yeah.
Where he sat there with Kelly Rudy and with Bieksa and Jen, tells them, yeah, Barkov is the best defensive forward I've seen since the guy that swept me the first time we played them. And so maybe there's those parallels there. Maybe this does serve as an adjustment for the Oilers. I don't think this is the last time they'll be there. I really believe that this is only going to make a player like McDavid more, like, I guess it's hard to say more hungry because he's already Connor McDavid. We've got tweets of him when he's 13 years old going, doesn't this make other people mad? don't you get jealous when you see teams win the Stanley Cup? You go, dude, you're a child. Just relax. You couldn't win. You weren't allowed to be on the team. But maybe some of the actually being there, the feeling out process of going to a Stanley Cup final, and that other thing Gretzky said of the 3 seasons, the regular season, the playoffs, and then the Stanley Cup. Now that does sink in for a guy like that. Maybe he does look at the series and wants to make some adjustments. Like, maybe they are not staying out there for the entire power play when it's not going well. Maybe there is a little bit more of a focus to detail. Like, he did make the mistake on the first goal of the series. right? Barkov makes a good read. McDavid makes a bad one, yeah. Breaks out the other way, and the Panthers are up 1-0 in a series in a hockey game where, yeah, ultimately Edmonton looks back on as, has to be looking back on as the main pivot point in the series. They should have had that game. And maybe they do if that the space-time continuum, if it goes the other way. But to me right now, it hasn't felt like McJesus McDavid. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Stugatz comes on here and Greg Cote. These days, guys, you know, they build their McDavid narratives. And I even saw one guy yesterday tweet, like, McDavid is Luka. It's like, no, it's not that. Like, it's not, it's nothing like that. It's not one where you're going to crush McDavid. It's not one where you go, because, like, the reason why I crushed Luka yesterday is because I thought he quit on his team and he melted down. Mm-hmm. And there hasn't been a meltdown for McDavid. I don't think that he's playing poorly by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think, like, man, again, he created that play, which was the best save of the night, mm-hmm. McLeod save that would have made it 4-4. Yeah. Yeah. And if that goes in the net, we're like, holy crap, that's the magic of Connor McDavid. He has had his moments, but he hasn't been in the middle of the ice the same way that he has been throughout the playoffs. I think that there have been, and it's hard to tell with generational guys like that, whether it's like a hope pass or if it's McDavid and that's how you end up with 100 assists. But there just feels like there's been a few more of those from him where he's just kind of like firing it into no man's land, hoping that someone, it gets a body or a bounce through the middle of the ice. And he hasn't been better than Barkov. Like in that head-to-head matchup with Dreisaitl on his line for a big chunk, those two guys have a combined 3 points and Barkov has a combined 4. All while, yeah, while he's a +4, I think, in the series, and those guys, I think, are a combined 0. Even though Dreisaitl's -2. So that's why it's like, yeah, the goaltending has been massive. And I don't think Skinner's been bad, though. Like, I really don't. That was a mistake. The puck bobbled on him. That's a bad bounce. But I haven't looked at him in the series going, dude, you're killing them. You got to make a save. Like, which one do you really want back? Which one do you really, that one where he goes behind the net? That's it. Out of all the goals in the series, maybe the first one you'd love for him to make a great save, but. Even, by the way, too, McDavid, they showed that one, that cross-crease pass. I think it was at the end of a power play. And they freaked out. And they're like, that's the best save of the night. Bobrovsky. McDavid shot it right into his chest.
Yeah, he did.
So, yeah, it's going to be a weird discussion after the series of, like, what the McDavid criticism level is going to be. I think that's sort of where it lands, is he's got to be better. He just does. You're the best player on planet Earth. You got to score a goal in the series. Like, I'm sorry. You got to be better than this, than what you've provided so far. But that ultimately, it's about you getting outplayed, and then maybe the next one when you show up, there won't be the mistake from game one. Maybe it does turn out to be the perfect performance. So yeah, I don't think you'll get crushed by any stretch of the imagination. I think everybody has a pretty good understanding that. The Oilers are here because of him. And the fact that, yeah, they're given, boy, the Darnell Nurse thing sure shifted. Eh? It was like, oh, it was all the media, and he has his best game. And he's out there doing his same thing, minus every night.
Bit of a roller coaster.
Yeah. And just, but yeah, it's between Nurse and Jack Campbell. That's like $14 million, like $15 million. That's a lot. People want to cry about Tavares because he's a 65-point player at 11 mil. He scored again, and he scored a series-winning goal for Toronto. Yeah, imagine $4 more million going to literally a guy who doesn't play. And, yeah, you're minus 16, I think, so far through the playoffs, defenseman. Anyways, we're going to do a quick pod. So subscribe to this podcast, leave 5 stars, do all those things. Follow on Twitter and Instagram. Reach out anytime at JD Bunkus. And yeah, we'll see you all over on the pod. All right, welcome to the podcast portion of the show. Armin is rolling. Do you get the button right this time?
Yeah. I got it.
What an idiot. Honest to God, like, wow. 35 minutes of my time. The people, you know. People say to me, they go, JD, it's not enough time. Like, I like the pod portion of the show. You should do more pod portion of the show. You know how much it drains me when I do the pod portion of the show? And then Armin comes in here and he's like, I did a bad. And then I got to comfort him too. Like,
hey, but it was just 30 minutes. You got to buzz with me for a bit.
Yeah, it's
fine.
Everything's gone.
Chop it up.
What I did say though on the pod yesterday was that the McDavid, McGregor pessimism. I did McGregor pessimism. You do a whole show where you say McDavid 100 times.
We're pivoting.
It's a hard pivot right there. That's a toughie. McGregor is out of 303. And now they got a new main event. It's Alex Pereira against, who is it? Jiří? Yeah. Yeah. So that's a decent main event. It's a solid recovery for the UFC. Feel like now this is the second time where they've pulled the Pereira thing, being like, like as they did it for UFC 300, where they went, this is our big thing. And now he's already back on 303. You're like, whoa, it's a quick turnaround. Apparently he broke his toes in that fight when he kicked Jamal Hill, according to Ariel Helwani, our friend who was all over this and who broke all of it and deserves a ton of credit because, like, he's still just the guy. Like, he is just the undisputed guy. Like, everything is happening, and it's just he's on it. He's knowing he's going what's on. He left the breadcrumbs for the people. He's a great dude, great reporter. They apparently still want to make this fight and that it is an injury to McGregor. So maybe the one thing I did say that got lost is I've always had a hard time picturing actually seeing McGregor fight again outside of some sort of boxing Jake Paul universe of thing. You know, eventually he comes back and does a Mike Tyson like cash grab for
a
Netflix
sideshow thing.
Yeah, he's getting paid $1 bazillion to do a boxing match. The UFC stuff just always seems so hard for me to believe because, one, are you at your age going to be able to do this? Like, are you, where's the belt for McGregor? Leon? I don't know, man. Leon probably kicks your ass at this point, dude. McGregor's going to be 36 in a month. I can just tell you as that the same age is that
I was about to say as a 36-year-old.
It's washed. Life is hard to do things now. I am currently wearing tape. I went to physio yesterday. I have that like athletic tape on my back.
Hell yeah.
Not from being like a crazy athlete or anything. I'm just trying to lift weights.
Yeah.
And my shoulders are like, yo, lifting weights now sucks. Like you trying to get gains. Maybe just maintain. Maybe you're just, that's the old guy thing. You know, when you watch like old people, really old people work out and they've just got like the 5-pound weights.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I might have to pivot to now.
Just trying to make sure your body isn't falling apart
actively.
Yeah,
that's it. It's just maintain what little muscle you have left. I actually think I'm at the point now where I'm going, might be steroids time. Certainly getting close to testosterone time. It's getting close to steroids time. I don't know. Why not?
Taking longer to recover? Like, it's like you're just staying store
what
for the whole week?
Buddy, not longer to recover. Recovery is just out.
It's ongoing at all times. I'm always in a state of recovering.
Get on the creatine, buddy.
Okay. Yes. No, stop talking. Please.
It will help.
Just make sure the podcast is running. it's at the point now where my summer goal is, can I play tennis at some point
there
this
you
summer?
Go.
Can my shoulders get to the point where I can swing a racket is what we're hoping for. So McGregor getting hurt now, getting injured enough that he's going to have to miss this fight, work his way back at some point in his now 36th year of life as he has gotten much bigger, a lot more weight on the body, a lot more substances, I think, that he has consumed. I just still have my doubts it ever happens. I want it to happen, but even if it does, my guess is that it's not going to, like, think about GSP's comeback, okay? GSP's comeback, he goes up a weight class because he's having a tougher time, cut the weight, which is natural with older fighters. He almost loses to Bisping. Like, there was a real moment where he's in trouble in that fight, but he didn't look anything like the same GSP. And this is a guy who, do you guys follow GSP on Instagram?
No.
Like, either of you? Like, Armin, go look at his Instagram right now. It's just dudes like, his entire life still is exercise
just
and recovery.
Being the
so I was going to say, let's see him on TikTok. He's pretty big on TikTok.
Yeah,
too.
He's shredded. He looks the exact same. Like his body looks very similar to where he was as a fighter, a little bit bulkier, but ultimately, yeah, he's cut. He's got abs. He's shredded. He works out every day. It's all about recovery and what he puts in his body.
You're saying you don't think Connor's living up to that same standard?
I don't think Connor's living up to that same standard. I don't think Connor's living up to the same standard. And how old was GSP when he made his comeback and beat Bisping? 38, I want to say, because that was like 5 years ago, maybe even closer to 37. Find out what year he won. He beat Bisping. Because when he won at middleweight.
2017.
Yeah. And how old is he now? 42?
He is. Sorry, my internet is terrible.
No, it's more than 5 years. So we already established that. God.
36. He was 36
God,
at the time.
He's 36. He's the same age as McGregor. And he's Mr. Physical Conditioning, Physical Shape. It's just, this is not going to look the same. And so I'm not, like, part of me, obviously part of me wants to see McGregor because I'm just like all of you who was a huge Conor McGregor fan. Yeah. I mentioned yesterday, but none of you heard it, that the rise of Conor McGregor was truly one of the most entertaining things I've ever seen. There's never been a mix of personality and skill the way that there has been with Conor McGregor in the MMA world. There just hasn't. He was a one of one. He was truly special. When we do generational, it's like you got a generational trash talker in with generational mitts.
You could back it up, yeah.
And
he was a supernova, man.
Yeah, it's just like you'll probably never get it again. Even when we see things like Patty the Body, he's whatever. Meh. You know? Meh. Or you get Colby Covington. He's just like, yeah, all right, cool. Cool trash talk. Like, no one is even in the same stratosphere as Conor McGregor. No one's even close. No one moves the needle in the UFC like that right now. Not even close. Like, Sean O'Malley? Come on. You think I get in texts about Sean O'Malley? You know how many texts I got about Conor McGregor? Lots. Mm. Many. Beaucoup. So, yeah, I'm pretty sad that we won't see him. I'd love to see him fight again, but part of me is just like, nah, you know what? We had it. It's over. Let it go. Let's try to find the new thing. All right, what's next? What's up? What did we miss?
Jags extended Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
5 year, $275 million extension, $142 million guaranteed. You always got to get that guaranteed number. I mean, obviously the quarterback market, right? It keeps changing and changing, but like, what do you think of the Jags? It's funny, like a couple years ago, it was like, ooh, the sneaky Jags, they got Calvin Ridley, blah, blah, blah. Like, where are we at with the Jags?
This is a Blake Murphy question, because he knows the Jags.
Right.
I was listening to a podcast last week with Bucky Brooks and with Daniel Jeremiah, where they basically outlined a strong case for the Jaguars to be one of the, like, big bounce back teams or big point differential benefactors for going into next year, like buy lower on. I can kind of buy it. The only thing is that Brooks works for the Jags. Mm. And so, wait, is it the Jags? Yeah, I think it is. And so it is a little bit harder to believe it when a guy is a team employee. But I think that this is the kind of ultimate prove it season for Trevor Lawrence if he wants to be in the conversation with the greatest ones. Like, no one ever doubted him being good. The question is, like, could you be great?
Yeah.
And so far, we just haven't seen him win his team ball games. Like, I think Justin Herbert has been overrated, right? But he's one of the most skilled guys. He's one of the most talented
you
guys.
You see those flashes where you're like,
And he's also had wins and he's had moments. I just don't really have that as much with Trevor Lawrence where I feel like, boy, the team won because of you. It's like, it's way too many 258 yards passing with two touchdowns and a pick for Trevor Lawrence for me.
Yeah.
And so this is very much a, what are you going to do for me this year? Like, did they bring Calvin Ridley back? I feel like they actually let him go, right? Yeah. So who are their receivers?
Oh, like Christian Kirk. And,
yeah, well, he's the old faithful there for them. But I want us to learn who your receivers are because you're great.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, sure.
Like, I want one of those things. Like, I feel this way with Justin Herbert, where they lost Keenan Allen and they lost Austin Eckler. And I don't think it's going to be all that bad for him.
Yeah. Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, and then...
Oh, Gabe Davis is all right.
Yeah. Oh, Brian Thomas Jr. drafted Evan Ingram. Right.
Brian Thomas Jr. is a good pick.
And then, like, not a lot of names. Washington,
but that's what I'm saying.
That should be
more than enough, bro. That should be more than enough. Like, go out and ball. Go out and do the damn thing. So I just think that we're now at the point with Trevor Lawrence where you're not young anymore, man. This is not, like, a developmental time. Now you're paid. You're on the big ticket. You're on the monster deal as a quarterback. Now I think you're getting judged in a whole different way. I used to feel kind of like bad the way that I would criticize Trevor Lawrence, going like, well, I don't know. And I was like, no, you deserve it now.
All well, right, I'm like, look, the Texans should be good, but I mean, that division like should be okay. Yeah. But that division is always kind of in a state of being pretty open. Taking. Yeah. So
Texans should be good, but I wouldn't be going crazy if there was a sophomore slump year from
Absolutely
CJ.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
100%.
Like, I wouldn't be the most shocking result on planet Earth. Although, man, their receiver core too. Like, they were so dangerous last year, and I was just like, damn, now you add Diggs to that. Say whatever you want about Diggs, and Bills fans do now, but
you got to feel the floor of Diggs is still a pretty damn good receiver.
Yeah. Tank Diggs, Nico,
Dalton Schultz.
Schultz is good. Schultz is good.
Sure.
Yeah. Our boy, Matt Hayes, played for the Cowboys, so he's the greatest of all time. Like, every white tight end that goes and plays for Dallas, our boy Matt Hayes is like, he's so good.
I had to hear so much about Jason Witten from Matt Hayes.
It's like, yeah. Dude, if you actually say bad things about Jason Witten Hayes, like, he'll melt down. Like, he'll melt down like a five-year-old. It's crazy. All right, what else?
The Mavs skipped their media availability after shoot-around.
Arvin, you got what? So what, they got an explanation on this?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jason Kidd afterwards was asked about it, and he said it was just a film session today. So
sure,
film
only.
What
was he going to say? Film only. Okay, whatever. It's a bad look, man. It just is. So if, for those of you that don't know, there's always shoot around, and then the media is allowed in, and they're able to, like, look at you, and mostly it's, like, reporters who just do Instagram posts being like, look, I'm here.
Yeah, so-and-so shooting on a side basket.
Look,
yeah.
I'm here. I'm at the thing. And I'm someone who's did that when the finals were here. So no shade.
Yeah.
At least I had to do my show down there. I was doing my show from Scotiabank. Yeah, I just... This is my my gut feeling is probably a little too harsh because I'm in just so mad at Luka mode for the way that he's playing. I just find it to be so abhorrent for a guy of his caliber who has reached this stage to... It doesn't sit well with me. I don't want to take cracks at soccer fans here, but one of the things that does... really prevent me from being a soccer lover is sometimes you see the greatest players just going into full diver crybaby mode and people go, oh, NBA people flop. It's like, dude, NBA and soccer flops are so different in terms of the like sustained reaction and then the yelling and the, you know, the hands with the officials. Luka is full soccer, man. Like, he's worse. Like, I don't know. I don't watch professional soccer, but I can't imagine that there's a soccer player right now that is worse than Luka Doncic.
Yeah, he's currently at the top, near the top of the list of
it's
whiners.
It's so bad. Whining and flopping combo. We've never had. You're the GOAT.
He's also a supernova.
You're the GOAT. You're the Conor McGregor of those two things combined.
Chris Paul is close, too.
Who?
Chris Paul.
No, get out of here. Just not even close. Not close at all. Chris Paul is like a couple things here. One is Chris Paul is one of the best defensive point guards ever, and Luka can't play defense whatsoever. And so Chris Paul, when he's actually defending, plays defense. Luka literally just flops and bails and then starts whining and complaining at officials. I've never seen Chris Paul like fall and fade out of multiple plays in big games the way that I'm seeing Luka. Like, no, it's a non-starter. Like, he is very much like in guys' ears. Like, there's guys who complain.
Yeah, he
but
complains.
But I'm saying,
just
like,
to work.
A flopper, bro. Come on, like, what are you talking? Where's the Chris Paul big flops? Like, that's BS. But I just think that missing this media day thing or missing the shoot around stuff, it just reeks of we're quitting. Like, the same thing. It's quitter mentality. We're like, they don't want to show up. They don't want to show up and have to do the thing. They don't want to have to stand in front of the media, and they don't want to have to answer the tough questions. They're protecting Luka. It's the best player down, the best player trickle-down effect of they know if they go out there, the questions are going to be, hey, what do you say to Luka? How do you get Luka back in the and none of those players want to do it. Luka doesn't, because Luka doesn't want to hear them say it, and Luka doesn't want to have to answer for it either. He's not going to go out there, so the players aren't going to go out there. So to me, it's a trickle-down thing, and I hate it. I don't like it. I don't think it's overstated. I think it's a real issue where we talk about culture a lot in sports, and this is a culture show. This is a show that often talks about it because I think culture, no matter where you work, actually really matters, really, really deeply matters. And I don't know if this feels like it's really the culture that we thought was being set there with mature Kyrie. You realize that it doesn't matter what mature Kyrie level or what mature level he's at. It's about Luka and where he goes. Anyways,
I get it from the Mavs perspective of like, look, you shut it down. So as you said, you avoid all the questions about
that's
whatever.
That's part of the gig, dog.
100%, 100%. Like, but I think that from their perspective, at least you shut it down for here. And like, hopefully in game four, he bounces back and actually tries. And you just never have to answer some of that those questions. Yeah. And then the worst is that you get ripped a bit for skipping. I think I would still send him out there. But like, that's obviously like they're still in protection mode.
Yeah. What drives me crazy, though, is when fans defend that stuff and they're like, well, we get it from the team standpoint. It's like, you're not on the team. You're a fan.
Oh, yeah. This look, is for you. I would way like, rather yeah. have it. I like, would way
you
rather
you as a fan
have it.
Don't want the content of PJ Washington sounding
to,
off on the media. Like,
I
want to
hear Luka
fine.
Have to answer those questions for sure.
Anyway,
at some point, I guess.
What's next?
Hey, the Utah Hockey Club is going to be called the Utah Hockey Club.
So that's actually official that the name is
so
that?
It's temporary. For this year, yeah. So they're still
that's
voting.
Actually, no, that's actually so lame. That's
I'm
going to so
be honest,
lame.
This whole thing is pretty lame.
No, that's brutal. I actually saw the sweaters and I went, oh, these look nice. But I thought that this was like, these are what they're going to look like. Regardless of what the team name is. So, for them to do this, this is the ultimate cash grab move where they're like, we are stealing the Washington Commanders football club name, and now we're going to sell you on jerseys the next year.
So like, here's the thing. Here's what I'll tell you. They're, regardless, they're going to keep this color palette or whatever for whatever they name the team. And then the vote's still ongoing. And for year one, least they said Utah Hockey Club is still in the mix, but at least.
Oh, so this they haven't decided the name yet.
No.
Oh, but they're not saying that the name next year is going to be Utah Hockey Club.
Next year it is.
Oh, it is. That's the lamest thing ever. No, that's the lamest
thing
ever.
They are leaving the door open.
Listen,
to...
this isn't trying to figure out Cold Fusion, guys. You're deciding between being called the Yeti, the Outlaws, and the
Venom,
Mammoth.
Venom, Yeti,
no,
Outlaws,
Venom's out.
Mammoth,
none of those things
Blizzard.
Are real. It's Yeti or it's Outlaws or it's Mammoth. Those are the three.
Or it's Utah Hockey Club, apparently.
Fine. If you don't stick with Utah Hockey Club now, you're losers forever. You'll never win. You're out. You're cursed. I put a curse on you.
I
put
agree.
A curse on you, Utah. If you do cash grab for your fans, like, again, hey, just this is, by the way, now we're seeing millennials own hockey teams, right? This guy's a millennial because this is a classic millennial move. Indecision. Paralyzed. Oh, I've got more than one option. I don't know what to do. Oh my God, I'm paralyzed.
Here, I'll make
do.
This decision for now.
Yeah, but it's not permanent. It's not permanent.
Okay. The Utah, I don't know. I'm vehemently in team. Just pick a name and play
awful.
The games.
Again, this is not a consequential thing. This is between being called after the abominable snowman or a dead elephant.
Pick a team name and play the games. Also,
yes.
I always love the like the PR of like jerseys and colors and stuff. So just so you know, the official colors, while it looks like it's blue, black, and white, it's rock black, salt white, and mountain blue.
Apparently the Argos have mountain blue. I thought we thought it was baby blue, but that's the exact Argos blue.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That is Argos blue. I know what Argos blue looks like, and that's Argos blue. That made me think about
Well, there's
the
two blues because they're the double blue.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying that made me feel very Argos because
for
that,
sure.
The black is looks close to the Argos
little
dark
navy.
Blue.
Yeah.
And so I went, oh, this is very Argo-esque. Anyways, what's next?
Long lines popping up at the Shake Shack, the first Canadian Shake Shack ever opening up.
Shake Shack is fun to say.
It is.
Like you say it feels good, right? Like Shake Shack.
Shack.
You're like, ooh, that made
Shake
me
Shack.
Feel better. Like that might be, you know, people have mantras to get into meditating, and mine might be that.
Shake Shack.
Shake Shack.
Shake Shack.
Shake Shack. This is a lot of free ads for them. But
yeah, seriously. So this is a multi-pronged question.
If I
honestly.
Ever see that, by the way, as a Shake Shack ad, I'm suing everyone. So just so you know.
Intellectual property.
Yeah, I'll come at you, Shake Shack.
Have you ever had Shake Shack?
No.
No, me either. So moving on from that, look, the city loves to line up for stuff.
Yeah.
Toronto's always been a lineup city.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, lineup. We're the new thing city. The new thing is the best.
Yeah.
And if there's a line, we want to go there like nobody's business.
100%.
Really works.
So at this point in your life, as we've well established, we're both 36.
Yeah.
What, if anything, are you lining up for? Are you still
Nothing.
In lineup mode? You're done.
No.
Done with lines.
No.
We're out.
Date Sydney Sweeney.
That's it.
I'm not
you'll
getting
queue,
in the line.
You'll oh,
no,
you're not queuing.
I'm
for
saying
that.
Like, There's nothing, dude. This is how I am vehemently anti-line. I think I've done this before because I've talked about amusement parks in terms of I don't like rides.
Right. Yeah, we talked about
this. It's combining my least favorite things ever, which is like too much sun, exposure, not enough shade at but roller coaster parks, amusement parks, lines, and being terrified that I'm going to die machine. Like none of these things appeal for me. Actually, Ennis asked me, he's like, we should go to Wonderland. I went, you don't know me at all.
I mean, hey, Ennis, hit me up, buddy. I'll go with you.
Yeah, no, I couldn't think of, and a drive. Like it's,
yeah, that is. You got to, hey, look, though, no. If you're going before like elementary school's out or whatever, you're free reign in the park.
Pass. Anyway, I hate, like, who likes lines? Nobody likes lines. But I would say that one of my most, when I feel as though, I've had a couple concussions in my life. And I, you know, you always wonder, especially when the concussion research came out, it's very unlikely that it's done any long-term damage. I haven't had too many bad ones. But when I do feel most like concussion ragey, is that I'm in a line and if I deem someone is taking too long in the line ahead of me, that's where I'm like, like I start to lose it. It's embarrassing. Or if I'm in the line, the wrong line, and then the other line is moving and I'm stuck, I'm like, I just immediately, same thing with traffic. If I'm in traffic and my lane isn't moving, I'm like, we're losing it. We're losing it. So, no, I hate lines. Queuing, whatever, it's not for me at all. You want me to go stand in a line for anything? I don't care what it is. The idea that you would go stand in line for food, like, I kind of get it, but I wouldn't even do it. But I get it if it was like you're a Taylor Swift fan and you love her so much. This is your favorite artist and they're so popular that your only hope is to actually go in a line and be there for days. I can actually understand that. Waiting in line for food to be early at the fast food place?
Yeah.
Do you really think it tastes that different than other fast food? Like, do you think, okay, you know when you ever do the game of you've decided to get fast food, you're drunk. At our age, it's like when you're doing it, you're drunk. You're getting fast food and you're like, should I get McDonald's? Should I get A&W? And then you get one of them and you're like, doesn't matter. Yeah. It's the same function. It tastes
moderately
differently. I inhaled it and now it's over. Now I feel bad. Like, yeah, lining up for a Shake Shack, I think, has got to be one of the dumbest things that any person could do. It's like, it's not going anywhere. It's going to be there forever. And then, like, in, what, 6 months, like a year, it's always going to do crazy foot traffic is where it is. But, like, I remember all this for everything. Five Guys at one point was like, oh, my God, we have Five Guys.
Was it the Chick-fil-A that's, like, around the corner from here?
Yeah, exactly. Chick-fil-A. Oh,
there was a line at Chick-fil-A for, like, a whole year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is now, who's there? But you go there right now. Nothing. So, no, I'm not the, I need this type with fast food. Like, I don't. I'm not like that with bars either anymore. Yeah. Bars are out. One of my favorite cocktail bars in the city always has a line. They don't take reservations. And I used to love places that don't take reservations because that was you don't have to plan. Now, if your bar doesn't take reservations, guess who you'll never see? Like, guess who will not be making an appearance at your establishment. And you're fine with it because you're busy. You're bumping. And you got all the youths and you own my old ass in there anyway. But I'm just telling you that when I go to whatever website to do the little reserve table and you don't have it, I'm like, I guess somewhere else. I guess not there. So see you later. Anyway, what's next?
I will say, by the way, when I moved to Toronto, it was kind of in that brunch golden age. You know what I mean? It was like 2012.
First of all, we're still in the brunch golden age.
Don't you think it's a little different, though, than the peak?
No. Do you know what the difference is? We're old.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
So our friends.
Do people still line up for brunch?
Of course they do.
Interesting.
Buddy, we're just old and all of our friends. I'm not even kidding. We just referenced Hayes. My favorite time in my entire life is for a 2-year stretch, four of my friends and I would meet for brunch like every Sunday at the same spot.
Hell yeah.
We had our own table.
Hell yeah.
And we would walk in. We'd have the big table. They would, like, basically clear. It was amazing. It was like a rock star experience. It was the best. And we'd sit around, and I'd make sure everybody put the phones away, and we'd just hang out and make fun of each other and have a great brunch and then leave there, like, really full. And then my friends would come back to my place and destroy my bathroom. It's the best. It's the best of times. And I miss that like nobody's business. But yeah, no, when you get older in the city, you don't have, you know, your groups of friends is available to you. Brunch is a great team activity.
Sure.
It's not the best one-on-one activity.
No.
And when you get older, you're doing more one-on-one activities, unless you're from here and you have a big group of friends you grew up with here. But for any, it's a transplant city. And so anybody who didn't grow up in Toronto, it's harder, I think, for most of us, and I count myself in this group, to maintain the brunch life. But yes, no, brunch, if a group ever wants to do a brunch, if you guys want to invite me to your brunch, no, I actually won't go ever. But,
come on. Jenny.
No, like you guys, yeah.
You and me?
Like the audience, yeah. But I mean, like, yes. Dude, I'm crushed. Yeah, anyway, it's like anything that's a big group now, I'm like, I'm fired up, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
few anyway, and far between.
What's next? Oh, speaking of that, let's do Raptors anniversary.
Yeah, okay, cool. So it was yesterday was the 5-year anniversary of the Raptors winning the NBA championship, lifting the Larry O'B. Let's just take a trip down memory lane, man.
What do you want to know?
What's your lasting memory of that night, of the run? Like what you got? Come on.
That night I was here, literally in this studio.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because I was doing Raptors reaction pods because I thought it would be super advantageous for my career. The pods did very well. It was Ennis and I. We were doing special edition good hours. Like, we were staying late, not for extra, not because anybody asked us to, you know, looking at you, producers. Where it's like, it's how it works. You work extra to try to get more. And we would stay late after every single game. We decided, I think maybe we were just for the finals, but maybe it was in the beginning of the Bucks series too, where we started doing like, we're going to stay and we're going to come in after work and we're going to record, or we would do them from home, I think. But we were here, we decided to stay at the studio. Then we were like, if they win, we'll go out and party. If they lose, you know, we'll wrap up the show and we'll go home. So Ennis and I watched it here together, and there was a bunch of people working that night, right? Like, there was like a lot of all hands on deck. McKee was here working. I think he was actually working for 680 News. There was a bunch of different people that were sitting in the studios and watching, and it was crazy. It was really, really fun here. But we watched outside, watched the game, watched it finish, came in here, banged out a quick recording. It's funny, I actually had someone reach out to me yesterday on Instagram asking me if they could find those pods anywhere. I was like, damn, I don't know if you can, but hopefully, because I actually wouldn't mind it. And then we went downtown, and did you go to Yonge Street that night?
I was working, man.
Oh,
I was working all night.
Yeah. Did you go to Yonge, Armin?
I was rocking all over the city. Yeah, I wasn't near Yonge and Dundas.
No,
I
saw
you
were there. That was
more
spot.
Down south, like near Front Street, around there, those parts.
Yeah, and when the Raptors won the Eastern Conference Finals, that's more closer to where I was. Like, I was basically on, you know, I was on College, I was on Queen. Like, I bounced around a little bit. I was down on King, the main part of it. But Yonge Street was the place, and I went to Yonge and Dundas. We battled through the crowds and the smoked out buses, and we went down there, and there was some people flashing. There was people running up the poles.
Yeah.
There was a lot of great signs. People were just like hanging off of every part of every different building. There were fireworks that were happening. I posted a couple of these pictures to my stories yesterday because I was like looking at them. But we just enjoyed the night. We were out there for hours. Like, we were out there. We watched the cops like come and clear the buses out. Like, then by the end of the night, you know, my friend Dunjack had left us. We ran out of beers. It was so funny, too. People were begging us because I packed a backpack full of beers because I'm not an amateur. And I went down after the show with my backpack and had beers with people. And I don't think anybody else did because I remember kind of like sharing it with the squad. And there were people coming up to us on the street like, yo, I'll give you $50 for one of those beers. Like, you know, like it was like, you know, I'll give $20 for a beer. And I was like, no. Like, these are way more safe. I'd much rather have this than your dirty money. By the way, the first night I saw, remember Kawhi's plant guy?
Oh,
I saw him that night.
Nice.
Remember seeing him? Yeah. I'm going like, oh, my God. And then he blew up and was viral.
It was just strangers hugging each other.
Yeah, it was like, the best. It was people celebrating Channel Let's Go Raptors. I remember we sang the anthem at one point.
We sang the anthem down at Front Street, too.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, like, it was a really cool night. Like, I couldn't believe, like, we actually won. So the celebration was insane. It was amazing. But I think the thing that weirdly sticks with me the most from the actual championship game is Steph missing the shot. Like the Danny Green turnover and Steph missing the shot. Like, it's the last thing that happened.
Yeah.
But it's also the thing where I was like, when Danny Green turned that ball over, that felt like my next Marshawn Lynch on the goal line moment where I was like, oh my God, this is happening.
Yeah.
Like that was the holy crap, I can't believe this is it. And that makes the high even a little bit higher, where it's the same thing with the bat flip, where I don't think people forget, but the bigger part of the bat flip to me was just that the Jays gave up runs in horrific fashion,
yeah,
where they had to delay the game. And you're like, what? Sorry, what's happening here? We're just getting screwed. And then the feeling of like you're going to blow it to you didn't blow it. That's the ultimate feeling in sports. So that's like my number one thing about like that night was, yeah, the more than anything else in the game was the Danny Green turnover and the Steph had a look at it, man. Greatest shooter ever had a clean look to send it to seven. Oof. Nightmare. Would have been a nightmare. Anyways, let's wrap up. Subscribe to this podcast. Leave 5 stars. Follow on Twitter and Instagram @JD Bunkus. And everybody have a great weekend.